Welcome to episode 145 of Conversation Street, our Coronation Street podcast. And today we're going to be talking about the episode's broadcast in the UK between the 10th and the 17th of April, 2015. I'm Gemma.
Yeah, and I'm Michael. You're sounding very calm today.
Maybe I just ate too much sugar. Let's put me into a coma.
Yeah, we're calm today.
Oh, hello. I'm so calm.
Welcome to our podcast.
We're going to use professional voices throughout the entirety of this episode.
I hope you enjoy
the smooth ride of our lovely English accents. Shall we start with Corrie history, Michael?
Yeah, but I can't stick with this voice. Too excited about Corrie history because 55 years ago, Joe McIntyre was born.
Wow.
Joe McIntyre.
Yeah, say it again.
Joe McIntyre fell off a boat.
Brilliant. 50 years since Shirley Armitage was born. Shirley Armitage.
This is going to be one of those weird episodes,
isn't
it? 25 years
since the new cabin was opened on Coronation Street after 17 years on Rosamond Street.
I don't know where on Rosamond Street, because as you know, Rosamond Street is just a road with one single business on at the moment.
I think Rosamond Street is made up.
They could just retconned everything that ever happened on Rosamond Street when they put that Eccleston's, whatever it is that's on there now. For shame.
15 years since the first appearance of Emma Taylor. Here's a boring police officer. She's investigating a break-in at Curly's house. And also, Les Battersby was stranded on an island in the middle of a lake while doing his community service. And Tyrone stole his boat.
Yes, Emma Taylor.
It was just like, so I imagine Les Battersby was very much like Bear Grylls the island.
It was exactly like that, actually.
He was getting lost and getting bitten, and then he got annoyed with his friends and threatened to leave.
Yeah, we started watching Bear Grylls the Island this week, didn't we?
We did.
Well, you said you watched it last year, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I don't know if anyone else watches it, but it was quite exciting. The first series, and then I watched.
It's like Big Brother, but on an island.
It's funny because the women got lost, so lost. It was like watching the Blair Witch Project because they kept going in circles and saying, "This is the same tree."
Yeah, it was funny.
It's good. You should watch it.
What else happened?
It's almost as good as Coronation Street.
It is 10 years ago this week since Ray Langton died. So sad. And Katie Harris put herself into a diabetic coma.
Diabetic coma.
So concludes almost the...
Diabetic coma.
What's wrong with you?
I just like saying things over and over again.
Diabetic coma.
I think so.
Oh, Ray Langton.
Saw him off.
Yeah.
5 years since the first kiss between Sophie and
Sean. Getting hot enough at last.
And John Stape got a teaching job using Colin Fishwick's identity. Because he really liked teaching.
Colin Fishwick is the best name ever on Coronation Street.
I know, Colin Fishwick.
I've used that in class, like when I've been writing things.
Really?
I've used the word. So when you're a teacher, you have to make up names when you're like writing stories or sentences with bad grammar and that, what they have to repunctuate properly. I've used Colin Fishwick quite a lot because it's quite a funny name.
Colin Fishwick needs to get some grammar sorted.
I also sometimes take the first name of a Coronation Street character and put their last name as somebody else, because I'm so original like that.
Right.
Creative freedoms that we teachers have.
Oh,
I'm so glad I'm going back to school next week so I can exercise them again.
So you'd have to think about what you actually teach.
Yes. Right, well, this has been a bit of an odd start to the episode. Let's talk about this. Let's go back and talk about this week. Corrie, it's going to be a long one, isn't it? Because we had an early episode last week, so we've got seven episodes to talk about. So
too many.
Shall we talk about it?
Let's move on to Street Talk. Street Talk.
Okay then, so Street Talk time now. We've got seven storylines to talk about this week. First one is Owen going gone. As we say goodbye to Owen Armstrong for the last time. Sad to see him go, Gemma.
Not the way he's been recently.
No, he's been a very much love to hate kind of character all the time, hasn't he?
He's been alright, and then he ever since the Linda stuff, I've not really found him that interesting.
No, I mean, Corrie always needs some kind of alpha male,
down to earth.
Exactly. It's just that's the kind of character that I never really like, so I'm not going to particularly miss him. But I think he had a pretty good exit when it came to it. So we'll go to that first, and then we'll go to the Platt household. Their storyline continued to keep my interest the most this week, I think. Good old Team Platt, paternity dispute, and the prodigal son we had this week. I loved David's discovery today.
What kind of discovery?
His grave discovery.
Mm.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Although I almost wish that he'd kind of kept it a secret to himself for a little bit longer. Because when David knows a secret and he knows something, I just love how he kind of likes to hint that he knows. And he was doing that a little bit today with Andy. But didn't last, but lots more good stuff to come there, I'm sure. Then we'll talk about the Bride and Gloom storyline and all the stuff that goes along with that. We've also got a little bit of Eileen Online. And I never even considered the fact that Jeff was just a figment of Todd's evil schemes until
it was revealed.
Yeah, that was last Friday that happened, wasn't it? So that was quite cool, and not much happened. And then just to round things up, we've got a little bit of the Carla and Nick Nickers storyline. What else was happening? Not much there this week. And a bit more of the Sean and Billy's revved up storyline. And like one line description extra of the Dev's Divas as well, because we discovered that Dev's uncle has died.
Oh.
But it's not Uncle Umed.
Phew.
Because we love Uncle Umed here at Conversation Street. I know that nobody else likes him apart from us. I thought he was brilliant, and I'm so glad to hear that it's not Uncle Umed that's dead. And I don't even think we can have to mention that anymore. It basically is just saying that Dev has got to stay in Mumbai a little bit longer. That's about it. So I'd like when he comes back to bring Uncle Umed back with him. I'm going to campaign for him to bring him back, or have some kind of spin-off with Umed and Grishma and Upma.
Yes.
I don't even know whether they've ever met each other. But
who cares?
that'd be perfect for me. I don't think it'd go down very well with the majority of viewers. So let's get going with the Owen going gone storyline and Faye's baby stuff as well. Baby's got a name at last today, which is good. We'll come to that when we get there. So this is the end of Owen, and basically things are just spiralling downhill, brought about by tensions with the baby, weren't there?
Well, the social worker's going round to visit everybody, and I was trying to make the flat look tidy, and Faye's not very happy about it, and Tim comes round, so the whole family's there, but then Faye ducks out.
Yeah, she has to go and get some biscuits, from the shop.
Just as the social worker arrives, and she goes and has a heart-to-heart with Sophie about how terrible she thinks everything is.
Yeah, and saying the baby doesn't mean anything to me.
Meanwhile, the social worker's arrived, and everyone is there except for Faye. And she's saying, oh, Jackson came over and his parents, and I should have left the baby at the hospital, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's what Anna says, that Faye said. That happened in real life today, didn't it? Somebody on the news, there was a baby that was abandoned at Southport, a little newborn baby, and I think they found the mum I saw on the news but I don't know anything about it. But yeah, I never even thought about the fact that if Faye had abandoned the baby, it would make national news. It's kind of like, and I don't think she'd thought that as well, had she? I think she thought, I'll just leave the baby and then it'll quietly get picked up and that's it. But
I thought it's quite strange that there's, like, weren't we saying before that they had, like, baby boxes where you could put a baby in some other countries?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, if it's made the news that this baby was abandoned, it must mean it hardly ever happens here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's good, I suppose, that kind of thing never happens.
It's probably a combination of the fact that we've got the NHS and good sort of benefits for people that have children.
Yeah.
And also the fact that we don't have crazy abstinence teaching and lie to children about contraception in this country. No. And also contraction's free too.
Yeah.
And I don't think you have to, if you're a kid, you have to get your parents, you know, you can go to the doctor and say, listen, can you give me something?
I don't think your parents have to say anything. But this one that happened today in real life, I don't know whether that was a...
No, I don't. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying, like, it does. Abandoned babies don't. It's not saying there are no such thing as an unwanted child in this country. That would be good, but
yeah,
we certainly don't have like an industry of abandoned children.
like some countries
so, you can mention.
Anyway, Sophie ends up taking Faye back home, doesn't she? And she kind of hints to Owen that Faye's being pretty overwhelmed by everything at the moment. So Owen kind of is pleased to hear that, because he doesn't want this baby ruining the life.
No.
He's kind of, well, he's not happy with the way things are, but because things are not good between him and Anna. But this baby being there is just making things worse.
And he knows that Faye doesn't want her either, but Anna won't listen. So when they're in this meeting with the social worker, Faye's like, oh, I haven't given her a name, but oh, I love the baby. And Anna's like, yes, of course you do, you know, encouraging
her. Well, yeah, Anna's kind of putting the words in her mouth, isn't she? And Owen's saying, look, you've got to tell her what you really think. And Anna's like saying, shut up, Owen.
Shut up, Owen. And she's like, I'll give up work and look after the baby and everyone will chip in and we're all very supportive and we all really want what Faye wants, which is to keep the baby. And Owen says, I think you'll find that Faye is just saying what you want her to say.
Whose side were you on then? Did you think that Anna was...
He says, Faye, you should tell her what you really want. And she says, I want to give up the baby.
Do you think that Owen was right to kind of push Faye like that? Because I think Anna was...
shocked.
Yeah, she was just kind of saying it. I can understand both sides. Because I think Owen said later to Anna, look, it is up to Faye to make the decision. And you just want this baby for yourself. But... Anna
I don't think she wants it for herself. I think she's so driven by maternal instincts that she can't see the wood for the trees because she's trying to protect both of the children there.
And I think what Owen said later in the week about her being guilty about not even realising that Faye was pregnant and now she's kind of making up for it now, I think there's definitely some truth in that. But Owen is just really using it as a way to try and improve his own life, I suppose.
I don't think so. I think he... Apart from the whole Linda thing and lying to the kids, I think Owen does what needs to be done rather than is sentimental about things.
Yeah.
I think he just kind of like cuts emotion out of the equation and says, this child was not wanted. She's only 12. Give her up to care. Someone else can adopt her. People love adopting babies, don't they? I mean, children find it difficult to be adopted, but babies are always very much in demand. I don't imagine they would have difficulty having a child like that adopted.
I wonder how things would have been different if Faye had decided she did actually want to keep the baby, whether Owen would be saying, are you sure, are you sure, are you sure?
Owen would be convincing her that she was wrong.
Yeah. But anyway...
Because, I mean, they all live in that tiny flat. I mean, that's the first thing.
Yeah, it's no good there, is it? Well, anyway, she, at the end of that first half of the episode, just admits that she does actually want to give the baby up.
And then, in the next half episode, Owen's like, you should listen. And that's like, oh, yeah, I'm listening. And the social worker says, oh, you don't have to decide today. And then Anna and Owen are just sniping at each other about... the baby.
Yeah, this is where, like, the beginning of the end, so the final straw, isn't it, for Anna? Because from this point onwards,
hate each other.
They do.
So this social worker leaves saying, oh, we'll work out what's best for you and the baby. And then Gary takes Faye away so that Anna and Owen can talk. And they just have an argument. And she says, oh, I'm not letting that baby go through care. And Owen says, oh, the baby's going to affect Faye's life. You can't let this happen. And she says, Anna says, oh, the guilt's going to destroy Faye anyway. She'll never forget. She'll never stop thinking about this baby. The whole time she'll be wondering where she is.
I think
and
that is true.
And you don't feel guilt about your own kids. And he says, I don't want a baby around. You're not thinking of Faye. It is true. Yeah, you'd always wonder.
Yeah, I mean, Faye's not a bad kid, is she? She wanted to abandon the child because she's not really thought it through, and she's not mature enough, but she's a good enough kid that when she grew up, she would, I guess, regret this.
She'll probably feel even more guilty when she thinks about her own life and how she was sort of... She's kind of done even worse to the baby than Tim and the mum did there, because they didn't abandon her, did they? She just was taken away.
Yeah, so even though Anna, I think, is being a little bit selfish and thinking about herself and she wants to keep this baby for Faye, I think she's just doing the right thing in trying to persuade her to keep it.
Yeah, because she hasn't bonded at all with the kid, and who knows whether she's got, like, postnatal depression or something.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's very tricky situation if you don't immediately bond with the baby. Quite a lot of women won't admit and feel guilty about saying that, like, when the baby was born, because it's supposed to be, oh, the baby's born and you immediately fall in love with it and everything's wonderful and all the hormones are released and you're just in heaven. But some people just don't feel that.
Katie didn't even take to Joseph straight away, did he? So
it's
Owen's family. Anyway, they
it's
just
genetic.
Have,
oh, wait a minute.
They just have their argument, don't they, for the rest of the episode. And he kind of brings up Phelan as well. And that is definitely the final low blow from Owen.
Well, he also brings up Gary and says, oh, we wouldn't be in the house, you know, that we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Gary. And She says, oh, I'm not sure I love you anymore. And he says, oh, I feel bad, I can't provide for you. And she says, oh, well, I can't trust you. And I don't know how you're going to react. And I'm exhausted with sort of walking on eggshells around you. And he says, oh, I'll do everything. I know I've done everything wrong. And I always make things worse. And from now on, I'll do whatever you want. And she says, it's too late, I want to split up. And he has a try at crying, but it's not very convincing.
He's been asking for it anyway, hasn't he?
Yeah.
It's been in the running for the past year, isn't it? Ever since Phelan. And how long were they actually, did they separate for? Was it a good like 6 months or so that they were kind of together, or not together, but kind of living together, and then they went back together, and it's just not been the same since then, has it? It's been quite a nice long running one. So then we had Yasmin in a scene later, didn't she? She came and saved the day yet again. Yasmin always comes in and saves the day.
She's so wise.
Her wisdom today was lavender oil to Faye, saying that this will help with the baby and reminds her that she's surrounded people by love who love her. And that was all we saw of Yasmin. I'm always like, oh, I just want to have her in the scene more. Because Ali is there as well, isn't she?
Ali is there trying to distract Faye from being upset by asking her questions about
what are you allowed to wear in bed.
Yeah, maybe you should have worn more. They've got a project she's doing about DIY knickers, basically, online designing. And so she says that Faye can help her with the research, but I think she's not really going to use any of it.
No.
So at the end of Friday's episode, Anna and Owen are crying, and Owen says, I love you with all my heart and soul. And then he leaves and she just cries.
Yeah, well, you can say that, but...
Well, on Monday, Anna's in a shop trying to get nappies, and Owen's there saying, oh, I want to get back to you, and she won't. She's boxed up all his stuff, and she says, I was up all night thinking about it, about being a bad mother, and I'm going to do right by getting her to keep the baby, and I haven't got any more energy to do anything with you, because this is the most important thing. And... Basically, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I know it is going to be difficult, obviously, with Owen not there, but she is right that this baby's, she's got to be able to give it her full attention, especially if Faye's not giving it her any attention at the moment.
So Faye and Owen have a little scene, and he says, look, things are rough, but I want us to stay together, so I'll do my best. And Faye doesn't want him to leave, because he's really the only one who's listening properly to what she's saying.
Mm.
For good or bad, he's the one that really... is validating her feelings of not wanting to keep the baby.
Yeah.
And then he says...
He says, I'm going to promise I'm going to try and get back together with your mum.
But then Anna finds out and tells him off for promising to Owen, to Faye about it. And then...
She says that you're not allowed to speak to Faye anymore.
Don't speak to him anymore.
And then he talks to Katie, who says... he talks to Izzy, who says he should go and let things cool down by visiting Katie in Portugal for a bit, because that'll make Anna miss him.
But then when Owen and Anna meet up later, he says to her, I'm going to Portugal. And she's like, oh, I knew it. I'm not jealous anyway. And he says, no, I'm only going there to give you space. And she says, I don't need time. I know what I want. I want you to leave. I don't want to be back with you. And so he goes back to the flat and says, okay, right, I've made up my mind. I'm not coming back when I've come back from Portugal. I'm not going out with Linda. I am going to Aberdeen and I'm going to stay there. And if you give me a reason to stay, I will. But she doesn't. And then she starts going on about him leaving Faye and everything. And he says, no, this is you. This is all on you. And she says, oh, you're just punishing... Faye and making me suffer and stuff, and he just says I'm leaving tomorrow, basically.
Yeah. So that's what he does. Wednesday was his leaving episode, wasn't it? It was just basically him going around telling everybody and saying goodbye. And
it's just like the doctor's last David Tennant.
Oh yeah. Going around visiting all the people that are important to him.
It's like a relay.
Goes and says Izzy, and she's a bit taken back. You could definitely tell it was still pretty cold in Manchester, because Izzy was kind of wrapped up. You could see a little sad face poking through this masses of scarves and coats and things on Wednesday.
And big hair.
Yeah. She's got massive hair, hasn't she?
She says, oh, sad.
Yeah. He says he will come back if she needs him. But I don't think he will.
Just do the bat signal.
There was a nice little scene with him and Faye in the cafe as well, wasn't there? Because
she gets some in there, but before she goes, Anna tells her that Owen's leaving.
Yeah. So he has this little sweet scene with her where, because she's blaming herself and saying it's all because of me that you're splitting up, and he's like saying, no, it's not, but really it is.
It is really.
Yeah, but he just tries to once more promise, get her to promise that she'll be honest with Anna about the baby, which I guess shows that he is, when he was trying to get her to tell the social worker that she didn't want it, he's not just doing it for himself because the baby would be difficult for him. He's, even though he's not going to be there now, he's still like,
it's really only
do what you think is best.
In the last few weeks that Faye and Owen have bonded.
Mm.
That's why it's really sad that he's going.
Yeah.
Because they always hated each other.
I know, well, it came out of nowhere, we said a few weeks ago, wasn't it? Just before she gave birth, and yeah, he was like, oh, now everything's on the up, and nothing could go wrong, and we're going to spoil
you
rotten.
And you're our little jewel in our crown.
It did come out of nowhere a bit.
It came out of nowhere, but it was kind of sweet.
Yeah, so he packs up and drives off and goes, and we almost thought that he wouldn't get to see Anna, but he sees her come around the corner of the cabin, and they have a
little cry
and a hug.
And she cries, and then he goes.
Yeah, it was quite a sweet ending for Anna and Owen. I mean, it's definitely leaving the door open for if he wants to come back, and the fact that Izzy's still on the street means that he could.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't think he's gonna leave a massive hole in the street.
No, not at the moment. No, maybe a year ago or so.
Does it open up the opportunity for Eddie Windass to come back though?
I don't know. Anyway, awesome. We haven't finished this around. On Friday, Tim and Anna are putting together some furniture for the baby that's going to go into Faye's bedroom.
Yeah.
And Faye's been out all day buying stuff. And she comes back and Anna snaps at her and says, oh, you shouldn't have had sex at 12 if you didn't want this baby furniture.
Anna said sex, it was a bit...
baby furniture in your room. And she also is annoyed that Faye's bought a new rucksack for school, and she says, do you honestly think you're going back to school? And Faye's like aghast, and she says, I'll fall behind, I need to study. And she says, oh, maybe you're after summer, because the baby's the priority now and you need to give her a name.
I don't know what the usual thing is to do for teenage mums, and like, do they just go straight back to school? Because I mean, adults have maternity leave, don't they? Is there
also,
such a
legally,
thing for children?
You're not allowed to have time
off
school.
Well, that's what I thought.
Exactly. Would it just be medical reasons?
Yeah, would it be an authorised absence or
interesting.
Not? But yeah, well, she says afterwards, or maybe
I'm
you
sure
can go
there's
after
very
the
much
summer.
Precedent. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so
I just said that. So Faye meets up with Greg at Prima Donna, and he kind of makes her realise that she'll love the baby eventually. And so when she comes back, she reveals the baby's name, because she's bonded with it. And what is that name?
Miley. Like Miley Cyrus.
Lovely.
Wrecking Ball.
Wrecking Ball.
Wrecked her life. I thought when I saw a few weeks ago it was going to be called Miley, and I thought that she was going to like call it Miley out of spite because of the fact that it has been a wrecking ball in her life. But no, unless that's like her secret meaning. And not the most English kind of traditional sounding name, is it?
It's not even her real name, is it?
What, Miley Cyrus? That's not her real name. Who'd have thought? Well, Anna and Owen, Tim, I mean, kind of gave themselves a like, oh, kids, what are they calling their kids these days? But I mean,
that was my kid, I'd be like,
no, think
again.
Try harder, must try harder. Well, that's what I could, like, an Sarah Lou wanted to call Bethany Brittany to begin with, and Gail was like, no, you're not doing that. But I suppose with Anna, it's like, as long as it's some kind of sign that she actually feels something for the baby, it's like, you can call her whatever you want.
Call her poo head if you want.
As long as you want to keep her, that's fine with me. So, that's going to be... there could be a bit of a break with the storyline
now. I don't
now.
Think she's going to give it up now.
No, I don't think she's going to give it up now.
Like, the psychological impact of naming something is very much...
Yeah.
Gives you ownership over it.
Yeah. But
my mum knew that sneaky trick. When I was little, I wanted a puppy. And my dad said I wasn't allowed one.
Mm.
And so Mum managed to convince him this was Sasha. And we went and got her and dumped her on Dad's lap. And she jumped on him, licked him on the face. And Mum went, oh, you should give her a name, darling. And so he picked her name. And then ever since then, there would
be
a fest. The
bond was made,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sneaky female
I would wonder whether Faye's going to go back to school or not. Because she seemed quite determined to. And
I know, it's sweet. I would have been like, no, I'm not going to school ever again.
Good skies, this, isn't it?
Having a baby. I hated school. But I wouldn't go so far as to have a baby to get out of it, but I certainly.
The thing is, the one thing that would make me think Faye wouldn't want to go back to school is that's where Jackson is, and she doesn't want to see him again.
Oh, yeah.
You'd have thought that she might want to do anything to get away from him, because as soon as she's back there, I mean, and she's going to get teased about it. I suppose when she was saying, I want to go back to school earlier and buying that rucksack, that was when she was just like, I want to go to school so I don't have to deal with the baby. But now she. If this bond is finally forming, maybe she's not going to be so fussed about going back.
Mm.
But I just don't think it doesn't feel like it's the end for Jackson. I think we haven't seen the last of him, but we'll see. I think the storyline could, well, I may be like, I mean, Craig's going to go back to school, isn't he? And he could confront Jackson, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe.
And say, look,
be
you need to do something about this daughter of yours. But he's a bit too like. He's too much of a gentle giant to maybe impose himself.
Faye's really got a life made, really. I would have loved to have stayed at home with work.
Mm.
I just didn't like going to school. It's because I didn't like getting up. Mind you, if you have a baby,
you've got to get up a lot more. Yeah. Right, should we go on to all the Platt stuff? So Friday's episode was mostly to do with Audrey and her I still haven't learned how to say that. Anna Karenina?
Anna Kolesnikov.
Yeah. It was just kind of at the end of that silly little storyline with Ken, wasn't it?
I thought it was quite funny, because basically what happens, let me just summarise.
Gets a study note.
Bethany tells her to get study guides, so she does, reads up on it, goes out together with Ken for a meal, and says some kind of clever comment about social hierarchy, and Ken's like, wow, I never thought of that. And then when they go up to the bar to pay for their drinks, Ken notices she's got the study guide in her bag and says, listen, you don't have to pretend to me and hide your study notes, but you should come up with your own opinions. And she says, well, I've only read page 9. And then he laughs and says, I was very presumptuous about what makes a good novel. And then they say, oh, let's carry on having little chats, which made me say to you, please God, no, not Audrey and Ken.
I don't think they would.
I think
they
go in there.
There's
no such thing on Coronation Street as a platonic friendship between a man and a woman.
I know, and... It's just too soon. I mean, Deirdre's not even out of his life yet.
I think the only two people who've managed to have a proper good friendship are Eileen and Steve, and maybe Lloyd.
Yeah.
Can you think
of
any others? I'm sure the listeners will think of loads.
Ken and Audrey have always kind of been friends-ish, haven't they?
I don't know. I feel like they're kind of like... They circle around each other without ever really...
I think they're too different from each other.
I know,
other.
I agree.
I think Ken, Audrey
That's
finds
why
him
I'm
too
worried.
Boring in
I
the
know.
End.
But it she just was seems... charmed by his kind of apparent willingness to let her off the hook. Because she, obviously, in her mind now, she's thinking, oh, I underestimated him. I thought he was just this boring old fuddy-duddy and all he cares about is books. But obviously he's up for a laugh and I've enjoyed myself and he didn't judge me for not reading it.
Mm. It just seems to be far, far too soon. I mean, there's been stuff in the press this week or last week that the Deirdre's exit storyline has been all finalised. It's like, I don't know when it's going to happen still, but they've kind of decided that. But that's not going to be for, say, another couple of months yet. And I suppose it could be early sowing the seeds of a relationship between them. But I don't know. I think it might more just be that when... Deirdre dies, I assume that that's what they're going to do to her. There's going to be somebody for Ken to cry on. Yeah, exactly. Have a cuddle up with. But I don't know.
Gross.
Yeah, exactly.
So then we move on.
Oh, they also tied up the storyline quickly where Sarah, Lou and Jason were pretending to go out with each other. And I thought that could have been quite funny to string along for a bit longer. And I was a bit disappointed how Sarah just... revealed all
in.
To Bethany. Yeah, we were just having a joke. So that leaves her open for Callum.
Lovely.
Which is what happened on Monday. So so far, well, at that point on Monday morning, Bethany and Sarah Lou were supposed to be going back to Italy, weren't they? So Gail had organised this special dinner out at the bistro, and she's trying to get Andy to not come, trying to put him off coming, even though it didn't particularly work. Callum comes round uninvited yet again, and it's like, Why doesn't David do something about this? Because he moans about him and he says don't come round, and then Callum apologises, all kind of fake apologises, but he just does it again and again and again, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bit fed up of it. But anyway, he's got this coaster signed by a Weatherfield County striker that Max has never heard of, and David's a bit narked about that, and by the end of the episode, Max is now obsessed with this footballer, so... What else happens?
Well, Gail's been harassed by Gavin's mum, so she's getting annoyed with Andy, right. And she doesn't want him around because it keeps reminding her.
Yeah, she tells him, oh, Michael's still not well enough. It's just, like, I suppose, a little reminder that this Susan Rodwell is still kind of on the
scene.
Needs
closure.
There isn't closure to that, is there? Yeah. I mean, maybe it'll happen next week with the wedding.
Bethany's trying to get Callum to sniff around Sarah a bit more by telling him that she's going to be in the gym, because she's trying anything she can to give Sarah a reason to stay in Weatherfield.
Yeah, even if it's a going out with a drug dealer.
So later on, Gail's with Andy, and then Susan, Gavin's mum, real Gavin's mum, phones her up.
So confusing.
And she's like, oh, Michael's fine, but you can't come to visit. And then... she says to Andy, Gail says to Andy, right, whatever it takes, you can't come to the meal. I can't see you there. I just can't deal with this anymore.
I didn't really see the point of that. That didn't really turn into anything at the end, did they? I mean, it was just led to a little bit more family bickering, and Gail was on edge during the dinner time. Everyone was on edge a bit. David was because of Max and his beer mat and stuff. But
well, Michael says, look, we need to get through today, because if we can get through all these arguments, then we can get through the wedding.
Nothing could stop us from getting married next week.
Now, meanwhile, Sarah's having issues getting her work done because Stephen's trying to get her to submit a report or something. And she said, oh, the router at home doesn't work. And she's trying to pretend she's not at a restaurant.
So she has to go home
to send a file. And she also reveals to him that she's going to Italy tomorrow and invites him back so he can help her with her router. And then they end up on the sofa together doing God knows what.
I think it was just a bit of a snog fest that
time.
I don't think it was any more than that.
She's worrying that someone's going to come back, and Stephen keeps ringing her phone. And then Gavin's trying to get out of staying.
No,
says,
Andy.
You've written the wrong thing.
I know, I am.
Andy's like, oh, my meat's not been cooked. I'll go and cook it. And they're like, no, you've got to stay at the table, I'll sort it out. And then he says, oh, you guys are going tomorrow to Italy, and Bethany's can't believe it. So the whole party is ruined by Andy.
Did Andy do that on purpose, do you think, so that he could, like,
try
and have an excuse to get out of it?
I really don't know. The whole family decides to leave, except for Gail and Michael. And Michael says, what's wrong with you? And she says, oh, I'm just worried about the wedding. I'm going to do some yoga.
Yeah.
Yoga's stressful, Gail. So the two,
They're about to go upstairs, don't they? But they have to hide in the kitchen.
Sarah Louise and Callum. And yeah, as they're about to go upstairs, Bethany, Max and David come home and they hide in the kitchen. And the whole time they're in the kitchen, everyone's looking for them in the house.
Mm.
And then Sarah pretends that she's been standing in the kitchen the whole time, not been responding to anybody looking for her.
No, she said she was going to put the bins out, didn't she? And then...
No, she said... Oh, I don't know.
I've got to remember. It...
Well, she says the bins aren't out the back, are they? They're out the front.
Yeah.
And the phone's still ringing. And then she goes out and meets Callum around the corner and says, I'm going tomorrow. You should move on. Goes back to the house. Bethany's packed and she's pretending to be all nice and saying, oh, we're a team, Mum. I'm mature. I want to help you. And the phone's still ringing away. She makes David answer it. He puts Bethany on the phone and Bethany passes it straight to Sarah Louise. And he says, oh, there's been a weather problem and I can't send the report. And then he says to her, we can't hear this bit, but this is what we're told. Oh, really? Because Bethany emailed me earlier, so I know your internet's working. You're fired.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Louise says, well, we're not going back to Italy now.
So was that a good enough kind of way of keeping Sarah Lou and Bethany in Weatherfield? Because it seemed like that came out of nowhere a little bit, and I don't think in real life Stephen would have fired her.
It depends on what it was that she had to submit. If I failed to turn in...
an issue of your magazine,
I would be fired, probably.
Would you? But I mean, I suppose it's because he's family and everything. I mean, they bring this up later, didn't they? Wednesday, they have Gail try and grovel to Stephen. But...
you really don't know whether she's been a good employee or not. This could be the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm.
couldn't it really?
Well, he didn't even want her to begin with. He wanted David to go to Milan with him, didn't he? But he ended up taking Sarah's, like, second choice.
The thing that grates on me is that Bethany has absolutely no comeback for this. She doesn't get punished at all. Sarah Louise just gets annoyed at her and snipes at her, but she doesn't actually punish her in any way.
Mm.
So,
well, maybe she just... Well, she's quite happy to stay in Weatherfield because Callum, isn't she?
I can't believe... I think you'd be a bit stupid to go, oh, I'd rather stay here with this hairy-chested moronic gorilla.
He's so grubby and rude, isn't he?
And then live in Milan in an apartment and and have a career in fashion.
Yeah, I guess it's... Well, she's back to her roots, isn't she? I couldn't imagine her living in Milan.
I'd be upset if I was fired from my job and had to move from an apartment to live in a like terraced house with my family.
Yeah, it makes me wonder whether when this whole thing with Callum eventually and inevitably collapses, whether she'll still be so enamoured with...
Why does everyone fancy Callum?
Because he does that sexy thing where he puts his tongue in his cheek.
Sexy.
And he's just so hairy and manly. Oh, manly. And he's got such a cool car and everything.
Car.
I don't know.
Anyway, Wednesday. Bethany's pleased. Sarah's worried. She wants Gail to grovel. It doesn't work. David starts detecting with the flowers again. She's looking at them and he wonders why. And she gives an excuse and he looks suspicious. And then Sarah tells Bethany that they're not going back. They start fighting over popcorn and getting it everywhere. And yeah, David comes back home and gets annoyed.
Yeah, you said there was no comeback between Sarah Lou and Bethany, but there was, and it lasted all about 10 seconds, didn't
it? Yeah.
Because Sarah Lou is really just Bethany's mate.
It's terrible.
It is really, but I kind of like it.
I don't. I find it irritating.
I kind of like that Sarah's got somebody else to fight against David, because that's what I'm most interested in, Sarah Louise and David bickering, and it's like... Sarah's got a bit of extra ammunition now.
I don't like it. It would be better if she was her aunt. She'd be good as a cool aunt, wouldn't she? She acts like the cool aunt who doesn't want, you know, like mum's younger sister.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
You get mums and daughters that have this relationship, though, in real life, don't you? Especially, I expect, if they're born quite, like, young.
I personally don't like... I think you should respect your parents and keep distance, a respectful distance.
I kind of just imagine Sarah and Bethany living in Milan as being like a nice little 7-year long holiday or something. Like, isn't this exciting? We're living in Italy and we're going to have a great girly time together.
I'm sure it's nice for people that have that relationship with their mum, but I think that's a really special, unique relationship, and it doesn't need to be like a friend, because you've got other friends you can have, but you've only got one mum.
I suppose it also shows in how Bethany treats Gail and Audrey and everything, isn't it? Because she's so familiar with them, it's because she's not grown up having respect for grown-ups.
Yeah.
Right, so Friday it turned more into the David's uncovering of the truth about Gavin / Andy, didn't it? Because Sophie and David are talking about the fact that Gail's always going in there and buying flowers. I don't know why Gail does keep going there and getting these flowers for Gavin.
Why wouldn't you just buy them from somewhere on the way?
Yeah, it's not very sneaky, is it?
It must be costing her a fortune.
I don't know why she does it anyway, because he was a nasty piece of work.
She's guilty. She's like Lady Macbeth. Washing her hands is what it is.
Mm.
But why you need to spend $3.99 on a ratty bunch of flowers every time, I don't know. And a taxi fare.
Maybe it's because she just likes to go to the graveyard to have a conversation with him, and she feels it is impolite if she doesn't bring flowers or something.
It's like the toll.
He's got a really good grave spot, hasn't he? It's premier position right outside the church there. David tries to find out when his next mediation session is as well, but he can't get hold of his solicitor, and that kind of comes back later in the episode. But Gail goes and gets flowers from Sophie, who's like saying, who are these for? And Gail's like, it's none of your business.
Good, quite right.
I liked how Sophie accused Gail of being a lesbian.
Gail says, I didn't come in here to be insulted.
Yeah.
Well, because Sophie says to get David, woman buys flowers for a man. Yeah. And then they both look at each other like, my gosh, it must be a woman. And then she says, you see a woman? And she's like, no. So David then follows her.
Yeah, sneaks on after her, doesn't he? And he gets to the graveyard and discovers the Gavin Rodwell grave. And wouldn't that just blow your mind? What would you think if you went to a graveyard and you saw my name on there? Or
oh, like I told you before, I would think it was funny and take a photo to show you.
Yeah. I mean,
because like, whenever I go through the graveyard, I always notice surnames and names.
If you see them kind of accidentally like that, but if your mum has just gone and visited and put grave flowers on this, and he had loads of flowers,
I would just
there, didn't
think my mum was mad.
Yeah.
I think she'd just gone a bit batty.
What was
David
happening with...
knows that there's trouble afoot.
Yeah, what was happening with Callum?
Oh, Callum just goes round to see Sarah again.
Yeah.
And they both say, let's keep this quiet because David won't like it.
Yeah, because this is on the today's episodes was when he found out that she's not going back to Italy.
Yeah.
Land of spaghetti, as he called it.
Exactly.
So, David, I was kind of hoping that he'd, at least for a little bit longer, try and keep it a secret
what,
that he knows.
From Gail as well?
Yeah, but I suppose this is so much of a mind-blowing revelation that he wants to find out.
He had to find out. He couldn't intuit from what he'd seen what had happened.
No, it's not like, aha, it all makes sense now.
I see.
So he goes, oh, Gail, catches up with her. And
she's like, oh, I was just here looking for a relative, my great-grandma.
Your great-grandma, Gavin, yeah.
No.
So Gail does tell him everything, doesn't try and lie about it. I suppose she just wants somebody to vent onto. Yeah, bird's not onto. And she's like, says,
Gavin's
oh,
no good, is he?
No, can't tell Michael the truth, kill him, blah, blah, blah. So meanwhile, back at home, Callum is just coming downstairs, doing up his belt again, just as he did with Katie, putting on his horrible T-shirt.
Dirty, right? They haven't got any diseases.
Yeah, and that's just in time for David, Gail and Max to get home, and he's like, oh, I just popped over to see Max
again.
They
managed to hide that very well, because David was more annoyed to see Callum in the house than he didn't put two and two together and realise that Sarah Louise was standing there with her dressing gown on.
Well, no, they just said, oh, she's been in the bath or something.
Yeah, well,
didn't
he
they,
didn't. But... He was more annoyed to see Gavin. I mean, Callum. And then Callum drops the bombshell that he's going to take David to court.
Yeah.
He's fed up with mediation and he doesn't
well,
think
he said the
work.
Mediation's not working. Yeah, so David's a bit annoyed. Well, he's David's realising that the mediation isn't working how he wanted it to work, which is that Callum would end up dropping himself in it because he's actually been quite a good boy in it. So, yeah, it's going to string on for longer to court. But, I mean, I'm just assuming that when Kylie comes back, that's going to be the end of it. So,
hey,
I'm not going to say what's going to happen in court because I'm just kind of assuming that as it gets to court, that's when Kylie's going to come back, I assume. But
yeah,
it seems the most sense to me. Anyway, it is Gavin's birthday on Monday, and I do mean Gavin, not Andy, because Andy doesn't even realise that
it's his birthday.
Yeah, so that's happening on Monday. Is it? Did they say they're not having another stag do or anything for Michael on Monday as well, are they?
Know.
I'm not sure. I don't see the point in that. But anyway, yeah, and David is in the bistro dropping heavy hints in a hilarious way that he knows the truth about it. And, yeah, he comes out with it at the end of the episode, doesn't he? Because, well, Nick's told David that he needs to up his game against Gavin and use his evil mastermind.
Gavin.
What did I say?
Gavin.
Gavin, Andy, whatever. Callum. He needs to use his evil mastermind brain against Callum. And David seems to have come up with a plan that he can use Andy to get back at Callum.
That's what you think.
And I can't work out what his plan at all could be, because David, what he wants is for Callum to end up looking bad, and I don't particularly know how Andy can do that.
Oh, it'll be something to do with drugs, like maybe he'll get him to buy drugs off Callum and then dob him in.
Yeah, maybe. But there isn't anything to do with the fact that Andy isn't actually and Gavin that's going to relate to Callum, is there?
I don't think so.
But anyway, it's all going to come out next week. So I think it's next Friday, maybe, that Michael and Gail are supposed to get married again. So I assume lots of things are going to come out. This time next week, do you think that Michael's going to know about Andy? What's your prediction?
I hope they get married. I hope they find out afterwards.
I think they will. I really don't think they're
going
to.
Come on, just do it.
They wouldn't have gone through the effort of putting two weddings together for them not to get married after the second one. But do you think that Michael's going to know about...
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be...
The moment.
I reckon maybe is the cliffhanger on the second Friday episode or something next week. That's when he's going to find out, or it's when it's going to be almost revealed or something. But yeah, I think he's going to know. Heart attack, maybe? I don't know.
Who knows?
Speaking of weddings, we've got another one coming up between Steve and Michelle. So the bride and groom storyline next, and also all of the stuff with Tracy and Tony getting together. So we've just found out when we left last that Tony is offering to pay for the wedding, which Michelle is thrilled about. But Liz doesn't want her revealing it to Steve because she'd rather he thought she was paying. I can't remember why. Why does she want that?
Because silly reasons.
I can't remember. I cannot remember why. Anyway, it doesn't...
It's probably something to do with she doesn't want him to feel bad.
Yeah, I guess so, because he's already helping out of the business and everything, doesn't he?
So Steve's really chuffed.
Yeah, to think that Steve's paying for.
To
but
think
Tony's...
that Liz is paying. Tony's not happy that he's not getting any credit for it. And then Tracy confronts Tony and says, look, I know you're paying for the wedding. Don't you think the money should have gone towards our business? But he won't budge at all. Later on, they make up because they had a little argument over it and agree to be mates. And she invites him back to the house and says that Steve's milking his depression and Liz is always going to put him first. And she and that they should be together. And he shouldn't be bothered about Liz at all. And they start making up. And then Tony rushes off to meet Liz. And Tracy finds he left his wallet, and she sees in there a photo of Liz, and she goes, oh, you'll never win against me. So later on, Tony comes into the shop to get his wallet while Todd and Tracy are working there. And so stupidly, Tracy and Tony kiss each other while Todd watches.
Yeah, well, they think he's gone out to the... Well, he has gone out to the back, but they're assuming he's... I mean, that was such a risky move, although what has happened about it since then?
Nothing.
Absolutely
yeah.
nothing. Todd's got his other plan with Eileen, hasn't he? Yeah. But yeah, now
well,
he knows
says,
about it.
He said to Tracy, be careful, Tony can't keep it in his trousers. Poor Liz, what will happen when she finds out? And Tracy realises he's trying to blackmail her and says, okay, I'll pay you more, but remember that I'm your boss and Tony's important for the business.
Yeah, so he gets a bit of a pay rise out of it, but...
Yeah, I could get a pay rise from that.
But yeah, that, I mean, he's going to be the one, I suppose, to reveal it to Steve at some point, but not for the moment.
Not yet.
So Monday then, Tracy's trying to encourage Ken to go off and see some French films so she can have a solo pampering evening, and that ends up with Tony coming round eating pistachios from Tracy's fingers, and they come to the decision that they should have a pub together, don't they?
Well, they say... Yeah, we both want big things.
Oh yeah, they didn't mention the pub on Monday, but they agree that they can't just stay kind of
working in the back street secondhand shop.
Yeah, exactly. They've got more that they need to do. Oh no, they did mention the pub because on Wednesday they're saying I do want to get a pub together, but she's got her sights set on the Rovers, which could be quite interesting. What do you think about having Tracy as a landlady? Do you think she'd
be spectacularly bad?
I mean, I think...
I like the McDonald's being in charge.
Oh yeah, I do as well. But I think she'd be even worse than Eileen at insulting the customers, wouldn't she? She'd certainly drive
people
away.
No one would go
away.
There. It would be empty within a week.
Yeah, I mean, with the bistro down the road, people would flock there and protest, wouldn't they? But I mean, you know, Tracy has got experience behind bars, so maybe behind the bar is the next logical step for her. I don't know. She says she wants to go to the Rovers because she wants to look down her nose at people, basically, doesn't she?
She said everyone around there underestimates her, and she wants to show them that she's better than they thought.
Yeah.
Then we have a bit of a side story with Steve trying to decide who wants to be his best man, because Lloyd and him are not doing well together as friends anymore. So Liz says, oh, it should be Tony because he's paying for it. And he says, I don't really know him anyway. And this is when she reveals that he's paying for it, and Steve gets really annoyed. Mm. And Michelle tries to convince him, but she's not really convinced. So then Lloyd and Andrea come to the Rovers, and Michelle says to Lloyd, oh, you should be the best man. And he says, well, I'm confused. Why are you asking me, not Steve? And she says, well, he's thinking of asking Tony because he doesn't think you like him anymore. And he gets really affronted and says, no, I don't want to be his best man there. So when Steve comes back and Tony's there, and also Andrea and Lloyd are sitting in the bistro and in the pub listening, Steve asks Tony to be the best man. And he accepts, with Lloyd and Andrea muttering in disgust in the background and making faces at each other.
I don't think that Tony should be the best man.
No,
because he doesn't really know Steve, and Steve doesn't really like him that much. And If they're not going to have Lloyd just for the sake of some silly storyline about their spat, then there's plenty of other people, surely, on the street that Steve could have as his best man. Although, I mean, maybe everyone else has already been his best man in one of his previous numerous weddings. But even someone like, I don't know, Kevin or someone could do
this
it.
This kind of makes me think this wedding isn't going to go through again, because it's like, Tony's supposed to be financing it, but he's in cahoots to destroy them. And then Steve has asked him to be the best man, but everybody knows it really should be Lloyd.
Yeah. I think it will go through.
But I hope it does, because I'm fed up with weddings that don't happen.
But you know already that on the day of the wedding, that's when the Tony and Tracy affair is going to be revealed. It seems patently obvious that that's what it's going to be. I hope it's not, because I like to be surprised about these things, but that seems to be already what it's building towards, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, Friday...
Tracy tells Tony to dump Liz and join her, and he says, okay.
Yeah. So Tracy is fantasising still about owning the pub and lording it over everyone on Friday. And Tracy says that, look, Steve is the weak point in the pub. If we get rid of him, then we can walk right in there and it'll be ours. So Tony has to take him down. So he plots an elaborate plan. To make it look like he owes £25,000 to somebody, some kind of loan shark. Yeah. So he manages to get Liz to think that Steve should pay him the money, because
he kind of manipulates her into suggesting to Steve that he sell his stake in the Rovers so that Liz keeps 50% and then they give the money to Tony. Tony tells Tracy what his plans are. Michelle says to Steve, maybe you should sell your half of the streetcars to Lloyd, and Steve's like, no, that won't work. I don't even know if Lloyd can afford to buy anyway. So it's going to have to be the pub. So they go and tell Tony, and he says, no, don't worry about it. And they say, no, we insist. And Tracy's listening, and she's like the Cheshire Cat his birthday.
Tony is looking a little bit guilty, though, isn't he? So is the plan then that Tracy's going to sweep in there and buy the pub?
I don't know how this is going to happen. 50%. She hasn't really thought this through, because if Tony owns half and Liz owns half, then Tony's stupid to break up with Liz for Tracy, because he's just antagonised his business partner.
But it wouldn't be Tony buying the other half. Wouldn't it have to be that Tracy's the one that buys the other half?
Well,
Tony can't say, oh, I'm going to buy the other half, because he hasn't got any money. That's the whole point. So
yeah, so where's she going to get this money from? Because she's in money troubles herself.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be left from Deirdre, happening too soon, isn't it?
She'd have to get a mortgage.
As far as Steve and Liz and Michelle and everything, well, they don't know what the state of Tracy's finances are, do they?
Everyone knows that Tracy's broke.
Do they?
Yes, because Rob left her up Crap Creek.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so.
And then she got broken into. Broken into. It's obvious.
Yeah. I would quite like to see a pub where Tracy and Liz own a 50-50 share.
Like dividing the bar in half, and they're not allowed to get over the other half, and then somebody coming up and ordering like a wine and a beer, and they're like, no, wine's that side, I only do beer.
But would Liz back down? Because isn't that what Tracy is hoping? That if there's the
Liz
two of
wouldn't
them
back down.
There's the two of them there, then they're gonna eventually get Liz to back down so that she can own it herself. I don't know.
The plan is not fully formed, as far as I can see.
No, it's not going to work, is it? Tracy's not going to get the Rovers, surely.
But I wouldn't mind watching it quite funny for a little bit.
Yeah, for a little bit, just for
when
a laugh.
It goes wrong.
So, a couple of final stories then. So, Eileen Online. Now,
this is somewhere we weren't expecting.
I don't know why we weren't expecting it, because it seems so obvious
so
now. We didn't think that Todd would be so mean to do this to his own mother.
What a nasty man.
But actually, Jeff is just Todd in disguise. Jeff in Dubai.
He's writing her some very saucy messages about rubbing oil on her back.
And then Eileen says, oh, I rub oil into your back. Oh.
And then he goes, ha-ha, you stupid old bat.
That's so
nasty
horrible.
Little bugger.
I know.
Why are you so mean?
We talk about Bethany not respecting her mum, but
he's a psychopath.
Actually, no, Bethany probably would call Sarah a nasty old bat or worse.
On Wednesday, it's probably where she learned it from.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, Elaine's got a new phone so she can show Julie a picture of Jeff, and she thinks he's gorgeous. But all the while, let's not forget, she's supposed to be going out with this Adrian, who's far more suitable for her.
I think Eileen's a bit out of order playing the field. I mean, I know she hasn't made any big commitment to Adrian or anything yet, but there was obviously a connection there.
She's flattered by the attention. She feels like she's over the hill and unattractive, and she's not valued for her femininity by anyone she lives with. All of the people she lives with treat her like a skivvy.
Exactly,
and so two men are after her at once. She's in seventh heaven.
Yeah.
She can't believe it.
On the subjects of phones, can I just get it out there that, and I said this to you before, I'm fed up with everybody on Coronation Street having really terrible ringtones.
Beep, beep,
diddler, diddler. It's like, if you live in Coronation Street, you've got a pool of about three ringtones that sound like they come out of the 90s that you can choose between. It really annoys me.
I hate that.
I know. I don't know why I get wind up by it so much. It's just like, I mean, obviously they can't have pop music or whatever, because it's like having the royalties for someone just
I think they could.
I remember once, was it Sophie had a friend called Laura for one episode or something, and they played that Scissor Sisters Laura song when she phoned her up. But it just, and I know people in real life do have the default ringtones on their phones.
I don't even know what mine is, because mine's always on.
Yeah, that's
vibrate.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think before long there's going to be people with like smartwatches and things on Coronation Street? Is that the next logical step? Going, ooh, I got a message from. Yeah, yeah. That I just want to get that out there. That really winds me up.
Thank you for getting that off your chest. So on Friday, Eileen's mooning over photos from Jeff, and he's talking about his jet set lifestyle, and he lives in Dubai, and he's got all these meetings, and he's going for sushi and stuff. And Todd's like, oh, he sounds so cosmopolitan. And then Adrian comes in with flowers, and they're going on a date. And then Jason and Todd are both sort of saying about how down-to-earth Eileen is, and how, you know, they're well-suited to each other. And so when Eileen and Adrian come back, Todd asks them about their date, and also says all about Japanese food. And then Adrian, knowing what they had said before about how down-to-earth Eileen is, says, oh, I don't know about Japanese food, but I like Chinese food. And Eileen looks at him like, oh, you are common as muck, aren't you? not like Jeff.
Cool. So it is.
And so she's obviously now, he's gone down in her estimation because he doesn't like Japanese food.
Yes. So I assume, are we to assume then that Todd's scheme is that she'll maybe opt for Jeff, and then Adrian's going to get jealous and dump her or something, and then she'll be left with nobody?
Yeah, I think so.
Because Todd's main aim out of all of this is to be loved, isn't it? And get his mother's approval and be the centre of his mum's life or whatever, because nobody else loves him, and he doesn't want some man coming in and getting
doesn't
in the
want
way.
He doesn't want anyone to be happy, I think.
Yeah.
That's it. He doesn't want people to be happy.
He just needs a fella of his own, doesn't he? I don't know who it could be. So that was quite exciting, even if it was just little.
Right, we have the Nick and Nickers storyline. Horrible, boring Nick and Carla. But on Friday, first of all, we have Alia's great pants
customised.
Customised pants. Sally thinks Alia's website's rubbish, but Carla puts Sally's nose out of joint when she says it's a good idea and we should go for dinner tonight so we can talk figures.
I really do not like how Carla treats Sally sometimes. I know Sally's the snob and lords it over
the thing
everyone, Carla's a pity
about it is that if you are that in contempt of somebody, you shouldn't have hired her to be your office staff.
Yeah.
It's all very well us laughing at Sally and thinking she's stupid, but I didn't hire her to be around me for 8 or 9 hours a day and then get annoyed. It's like you've made your bed here, Carla. It's your own fault that you're surrounded by this sycophantic idiot.
Yeah.
You should get rid of her, not snipe at her.
Yeah, exactly. I almost want Sally to get one over Carla. Supposed to think that, but I just don't like people
being disrespectful to each other for no reason.
Yeah, especially with Miss Josie Come Lately, Alia. Now,
yeah, Alia's blimmin', just because she's got this fancy schmancy education at that university that she went to.
Yeah.
Alia blows Carla off. Because she wants to speak to Faye about her pyjamas.
Yeah.
So Carla ends up hanging around with Nick, who then buys her dinner on the house, and they have a boring flirt, and he goes home, and then on Monday she gets her name changed back to Connor. Hardly seems worth doing the change in the first place.
Did anybody call her Carla Barla?
She said, Carla Barla sounds awful.
Carla Barla.
And then she's like, oh, it's too much bother to get it all changed.
It's interesting that...
And she said something about, oh, it would take a good something that will take a heck of a man to get me to change it again.
I wonder why she didn't go back to her maiden name, because when she was going out with what was her other husband called? I can't remember that other Connor, Liam's brother. He was having playing it away, wasn't he? He was having an affair with, or he was seeing prostitute Leanne, so like when he died, his name was besmirched, so you would have thought that maybe she might have wanted to go back to
her. I know, I think it's weird, but you know, I think that anyway.
Anyway, did they have a nice cosy chat in front of a weird fire? You said that it looked like her fire was some kind of magic.
It looked like a magic fire out of Harry Potter.
It does, isn't it? A bit of a...
It's a bit fake.
Yeah.
So, Nick goes around her house, gives her a chocolate berry tour to celebrate her name. They watch television together. And she falls asleep, and then he leaves.
And then we fall asleep because the storyline's so boring already.
It's so romantic.
Yes. No. Slow. It's a slow burner, slow death, isn't it? It is. And then today we had outside the beginnings of a storyline, but it's not really.
This is the final one that we're going to talk about because we already said about Dev.
We talked about Uncle Umed surviving another day. Yeah. It's kind of building on from the whole idea of not everyone accepts them, or not accepts
Billy. Everyone accepts people being gay.
Yeah, and he has
in
to
2015.
Work with people's prejudices and
I liked where this went today.
Tell me why.
What happened was, Billy and Sean go rambling together, which involves going to eat at the pub. And
a real-life pub.
If I'd known this, I would have gone rambling a long time ago.
Why?
Because I like going out for meals.
I love it when they show pubs on Coronation Street that are obviously filmed at pubs, because it just makes... Well, maybe I don't love it, but it makes the Rovers seem so fake, doesn't it? Because, like, the Weatherfield Arms is filmed at a pub, and there's the Dog and Gun that's filmed at a pub, and this one was. And the Rovers just seem so set-like, doesn't it?
Don't
weird,
they?
Yeah. I don't know why that is. But
anyway.
I don't know.
They do look very different, but then it is more of a restaurant-y B&B pub than a...
Mm. Yeah. Anyway,
they go for a room in the pub, and the owner says, "Oh, there's only a twin," and they're like, "Oh, don't worry, we'll push the beds together." And the owner looks at them like he's just been haunted, and so he doesn't say anything at the time. But then when they're finishing their meal up, which Sean had a hot pot to see whether his was good, he goes, "Oh, how was the meal?" And Sean's like, "Oh, it's passable," and he says, "I'm really sorry, there's been a mix-up. There's no room available. My wife mucked up." And Sean's like, "Oh, is it because I insulted your hot pot?" And then he realised that it is because they're gay. And Sean and Billy are aghast. And Sean stands up for himself. And he calls him a bigot.
Yeah, he does a little gay rights speech, doesn't he?
Yeah, and the landlord's like, "Get out." And he says, "Oh, I'm out and proud," and then leaves. And then they go back home. And Billy tells Sean, "I'm really proud of you for standing up to that guy. I wish I'd said something. I couldn't say anything. I feel bad that I didn't stand up for myself." And then they have a bonding session, and Billy agrees to stay the night, and I think he also asks Sean to go to a bake sale. And all of this is obviously making Billy reassess his approach to the softly, "I'm not gay, really."
Yeah, is it like, is now the time to come out to my congregation kind of thing?
I think, yeah, it must be just so tricky, because it's like, some of them must have guessed.
Hmm.
And it's one thing to have a gay vicar, and it's quite another to have a gay vicar's boyfriend.
Yeah. Well, he said that this Sunday's sermon was going to be about
tolerance,
didn't he? So, I mean, there's no episode this Sunday, so we're not going to see it still.
Okay, but the thing about this, right, I recently realised from another discussion I saw online, there's actually more in the Bible criticising fat people and greedy people than there is criticising gay people. There's even lines in there that says, if you're gluttonous, you should take a knife to your throat and kill yourself. There's like one thing about a man should not lay with another man as he does with a woman, but apparently that's a thing to do with property rights. And about how a man shouldn't treat another man as his property, because that's a woman's job, basically. Yeah. But yeah, I think Billy needs to get back to his roots, look in the Bible, and just not be chill about it.
We do get the word sodomy from the Bible, though, don't we? Named after the town of Sodom.
Sodom,
which is
yeah.
Like a town of.
Well, what's a Gomorrah then?
Hmm?
What technique is a Gomorrah?
I don't know.
I have to look that
it
up.
Sounds like a sexually transmitted disease that you get from it.
Sodom.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Do you think. So Billy stayed the night with Sean. tonight.
Is that fornication?
I don't know.
I believe so.
I don't know. I'd like to hope not, because, I mean...
That's against the Bible, Billy.
Yeah. And, I mean, Daniel Brocklebank is obviously very, very different to how Billy supposedly is a vicar.
I can't believe that.
I
don't think they would ever hire somebody that wasn't vicar-like.
He is not vicar-like. He's always cavorting around naked.
Cavorting.
Attitude magazine. Naughty. Or whatever. But yeah, I don't like the idea that, because he, apart from being a vicar and everything, and saying I'm a vicar,
there's not much
vicarly about him.
There's not much Christian about him, and I think it's so hard when you have a religious character, because it's like, how much do you really want to ram it down everyone's throat that they're Christian? Because I think everyone got sick and tired of Sophie.
Yeah. I just want to see him at work. I want to see him do a service or something just to remind myself.
Yeah, I agree.
Actually,
I like
he is a vicar
that.
And I want to see him be a good vicar.
I would like to see him with parishioners. I'd like to see a storyline involving him being a vicar instead of a storyline involving him being Sean's gay boyfriend who's a vicar.
Yeah, the closest we got to that is like, oh, I've got to go because one of my parishioners needs me, but
I'm not going to
show it on TV.
I've got to do a butler auction.
Yeah.
I've got to talk to Emily.
Yeah, so I'd like to see more stuff with his congregation, definitely, which I assume will come, because at some point this is leading up to the fact that he's going to have to come out to his congregation.
Is there going to be a confrontation?
Congregation confrontation.
Oh god, we've got a storyline title. I hope they go there.
And Emily will probably stand up for him.
Yeah, I think she will.
Yeah. Right, that is it for this week of its Coronation Street. Pretty good week. I mean, I was looking forward to David discovering about Andy for the whole of the week, because I thought that was happening on Monday for some reason, but it's been pretty good storylines.
Who's your character of the week?
My character of the week, I don't know, they've all got one at the moment.
Mine is David.
Oh, I was thinking David.
I always say
the same. As, we always end up thinking the same thing.
My idea.
You talk about
it's
David.
It's almost like
a bit.
We're watching the same show.
I know.
I like the way he snuck around, and I also liked all the snide comments he's been making all week to everybody. I like the way that he's been kind of pushed to one side in his own house, but somehow he still managed to get on top of everything at the end of the week.
David is a character that it must be so fun to write for, because like every other line almost from him is some kind of sly dig at somebody.
I think it's quite possible that David is the greatest character that's ever been on Coronation Street.
I don't think so.
I really do.
He's just got, if you got that, a certain sense of humour, I suppose.
I think he's an epic character, because is there anyone like him in any programme you've ever seen in your life?
I don't know. He's pretty unique.
He is amazing.
I just love,
And he's a piece of work, that guy, and he's been moulded and shaped. There's not many characters that you can say you've watched them grow from a kid up to an evil, like, Machiavellian.
And you can completely understand why he's turned this
totally
way.
Totally, and he's been consistent throughout. There's very rarely times when he's come off of character.
And I love his relationship with his mum.
Yes.
Just like the what was he saying about, what are you doing in the graveyard? Have you come to see one of your dead husbands? There must be some of them around here today. It's just like, he has so many good lines, but we're enjoying him more again now. Earlier on in the year, or maybe it was towards the end of last year, we were sick of him again. That was when Kylie was around.
Yeah.
And it just seems that better off without Kylie.
We always go, I want them to stay together.
We said when they're together,
when they're good
a good couple, they're brilliant, because they're a double act.
They play off each other.
But it just brings me down every time that David and Kylie are at each other's throats and the comedy goes, and I hope when she comes back they are a team again. I still haven't thought of another character of the week. I don't want to say Owen. It's the last chance to do it, but
don't say it if you don't agree.
No, I don't know. Oh no, I'm gonna stay with David, I think. Take the easy
way. We always sound so completely unprepared for this, but let me just explain to the listeners that we literally finished watching the episode about 10 minutes before we started recording, so we've had no real time to think and dwell on this.
Apart from the rest of the week when we were watching.
No, because we haven't finished watching the whole set. And
no.
Sometimes you can pick a character and somebody else surpasses them on the Friday, or they'd ever do anything again.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking down at the storyline titles again and I think, yeah.
What, you're bad at puns?
No, David is my character of the week.
Good.
As little as he's done, but today he's definitely made up for it. There we go. Right. We do not have a character profile coming in.
What
next.
Have we got?
We have got
a secret surprise.
Yes, wait and see. Here it is now. Right, we don't have a character profile this week, nor even a classic character profile, because this week I was lucky enough to get an interview with a Curry fan, who you might recognise off of the internet, called Jack. And he has become a bit more famous in the Curry community recently because of doing some Lego Coronation Street videos, which we talked about 3 or 4 weeks ago on the show.
Yeah.
Gemma, give us a quick description of what the Lego Coronation Street is.
It's stop motion animation.
Yes.
Using Lego characters to reenact amazing Coronation Street scenes.
Such as Faye discovers she's pregnant and Andrea on the roof.
Andrea on the roof, an excellent one.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, and I wanted to know a little bit more about how it was made and how he gets, where he gets his inspiration from and stuff like that. So yeah, we had a bit of an interview this week. So I'm just going to seamlessly insert it right now and you can have a listen. Hope you enjoy. Cool. So, Jack, thanks for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm okay, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thanks very much. It's nice to have another interview on the show. Thanks for coming on. I know there's a lot of Coronation Street fans that have been really interested in your Lego Curry videos that you've been putting up on YouTube. So it's cool to have the creator here to chat to today. So tell me about your history with Curry to start with. How long you've been watching and stuff?
Well, I've literally grown up watching the show and I've pretty much been watching it for most of my life. I started to become interested in it in like 2010, so when the factory siege was going on with Tony Gordon and the tram crash and everything.
Yeah.
And I've literally been watching it ever since, really.
Yeah, who's your favourite characters?
Probably Steve.
Yeah, he's a good one, isn't he? Yeah. And what about Lego? You've been into that just as long?
Yeah, I've pretty much always been obsessed with that because it's just really fun and creative, and it's, you know, one of those iconic toys which I think everyone just loves because there's so many possibilities of things you can do with it.
Yeah, definitely. It seems to have got a bit of a resurgence recently because of the Lego movie and things as well, hasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So where did the idea of Lego Coronation Street come from then?
Well, when I was younger, I was really interested in making little videos from Lego, and I found that Coronation Street was a good thing to recreate because it's such an iconic soap, and I really loved the idea of creating some of the famous scenes in Lego. And originally, I just took photos on my old camera of the scenes, but never added any effects to them, so they're basically just individual pictures that I scrolled through to make a scene, and it wasn't very good quality, but then I started using my iPod to shoot the scenes, and this meant I can put it together on a movie app, and it was better.
Yeah.
So
how did you choose which scene to animate first? Was it the Roy and Haley one that you did?
Yeah, I did one before that, which was the Rover's Fire, because it was a big thing.
Yeah.
But it was deleted from my iPad because it reset.
Oh, how annoying.
I know, it took me ages to make. Yeah, but it was one of my favourite ones because it took me the longest. But yeah, Roy and Haley was the first one I put onto YouTube.
Yeah. So what are some of the challenges you've had when you've been making these animations then?
Well, when I was making the fire one, it was hard to get the fire effect and I had to use like orange paper, which didn't look very good. And for that one and Haley's death, I never used the stop motion app. I just took individual photos and then put them onto Movie Maker, and they're a bit jolty.
Yeah.
Because of it. But for my recent ones, I use an actual stop motion app where I can take the photos and it saves it into a video, which I can then add into the movie and edit, which is more efficient because it makes the movements seem more realistic and less shaky.
Yeah, cool. So how long did it take you to make then this Rover's one that you've now lost?
It took me quite a while, actually, because I gradually did it over a few months because I created the whole set because it was the bar and the cellar and the hallway and the back room and all of the upstairs as well.
Yeah.
And then I had to film it all.
Yeah.
But I think it's the biggest one I ever created, and my recent ones usually take between 3 days and a week, depending on how long it is and if I'm creating any interior sets as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that Rover's set and everything, were they just the first ones that you'd made full stop, or had you had other sets made that you'd just made for fun beforehand?
Yeah, I did a few before, but I didn't like put them into it. I didn't really make a proper movie out of it. I just took pictures of it and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you like aim to recreate all the scenes shot by shot, or have you added your own creative touches to it?
Well, I tried to make it like as lifelike as possible by making the sets more accurate and trying to get the Lego figures to look like the characters as much as possible from my big collection. But I tried to add a little like creative touch onto it, but it's quite hard to get exactly like it is because it's in Lego.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same kind of camera angles and things you're aiming for then.
Yeah,
cool. So these two scenes that you've released this year, or the two videos, the Faye's pregnancy one and Andrew on the roof, they seem to me to be much bigger scale than last year's ones. Is that because you've used the new app towards them, or have you just like tried to challenge yourself further this year? Or
It is the app, and also I've tried to show more of the set I've created, and I put them in high definition when I uploaded them to YouTube, and I've gradually made them longer and things like that. And I want to film them more often, so I try to make them better quality now. Yeah.
So which sets have you got now then?
Well, I've built like permanent exterior sets, so the street terraces and the viaduct, and I've also recently just finished building numbers 4, 6, and 8. But I'm building the cabin, streetcars, and the salon, which I should finish in the summer, and then I've got the whole of Coronation Street like built in Lego.
Oh, that's so cool. So what are some of the favorite details you've got on them then, because they are really detailed from what I've seen?
I think my favourite building would probably be the Rovers, because I tried to recreate the big front of it, and I think it looks quite realistic.
Yeah, how have you made that?
Well, I just got some certain pieces of Lego and tried to... I kind of put the sliding bricks on the side, and there's some hinge bricks which you can create the bay windows and stuff out of it.
Yeah. And what about like the sign? So you've even got like a little... Rovers logos on the windows and things, haven't you?
Yeah, I created that on like I think I did it on Microsoft Word. It wasn't very professional, but yeah.
And you've done a lot of interior sets as well, haven't you?
I've also created small hallways inside the exterior set, so if I film a scene looking through the door, it looks more realistic, like the house is actually inside there, when in reality, if I wanted to film inside, I'd build another interior set.
Yeah, just like the real thing then, isn't it? Having a bit of hallway and then the actual inside elsewhere. So have you got like a big basement or something that you keep all these in?
We've got a room upstairs where I keep it, and it's all compacted onto this small table with shelves and wheels. Yeah. And I just take it off when I want to set up for a scene and set it all up on the floor and put like the cobbles down and everything. So it's how I want it to be when I film it, yeah.
Yeah, so does it just, like, take over that room for the time that you're filming videos then? Yeah. What do your family think of it?
Sometimes they get a bit annoyed that they can't really go up there, but I think they actually think it's quite good, yeah.
Yeah. So how's the response to your videos been so far then?
Most, like, all of the comments have been positive. I think people like the idea of me creating the soap opera in Lego, and I've had people ask me to do scenes with their like favorite character in it, and a popular request is for me to create some of the more older scenes in Lego, like the Reacher and Alan Bradley tram moment in Blackpool, or Ina and Elsie brawling in the street and things like that.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, you'd have to build a Blackpool set for that first of all, wouldn't you?
It would be a good thing, but it's quite hard to do because the set has changed so much, so it wouldn't be very like accurate. I might do it. I don't know.
Yeah. So you've got your YouTube page, haven't you? And then that's been and you've had some retweets from Coronation Street blog. Has ITV seen them as well? Have they promoted you at all? Forwarded you on or anything?
I think the actual Coronation Street page has seen it and they retweeted it and said it looks great and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that must be really nice to get the big wigs recognising it then.
Yeah.
So what are some of your plans for the future of Lego Corrie? Have you got any scenes that you're currently doing or in the pipeline?
Well, I'm not sure. I usually try and film them in my holidays, so I've got enough time. I've got free time to do it.
Yeah.
But like I say, I'm currently building the streetcars, cabin, and the salon exteriors, which I hopefully finish, and then I'll have the whole of Coronation Street. And also on my Instagram, every week, I started doing this thing where I take a picture of a group of key characters in that week in Lego and put them outside the house and do a like write-up for what is happening on the street in that week, and I call it This Week on the Street, which I think the fans of Corrie and Lego on Instagram like, because it seems quite popular. And it also makes use of the set when I'm not filming on it.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds cool. So where can people find that then? Because I haven't seen that before.
It's Instagram, and my name on Instagram is basically yeah_its_jack. It's the same as my Twitter.
Yeah, do you want to just share your Twitter and your YouTube page as well while you're here?
Twitter is yeah_its_jack, and my YouTube is yeah_its_jack, like three separate words.
Cool, brilliant. Well, brilliant. Thanks for so much for talking, Jack. That's been really it's been really interesting hearing about behind the scenes on Lego Corrie, and I hope to that we're going to be able to see some more of them in the future. I'm looking forward to seeing what else you can do. So thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks
for
having me.
So there we go then. That was my interview.
Well
with
done.
Jack.
Good interview. Thank you, Jack, too, for taking the time out to talk to us about your amazing work. It's really cool.
It is. It's really good.
It's a cool idea.
It is a really clever idea.
It takes so much time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he says it takes days, but I wonder how long each day it must be to do that. It was really cool. And then I also liked, after we had the interview, Jack put a little picture on Twitter as well, which had a little Lego man holding a Conversation Street picture, which is very nice of him as well. So yeah, he's at @yeahitsjack on Twitter and elsewhere, and that's yeah_its_jack. So make sure you follow him if you like Corrie or Lego, or Corrie and Lego. It's a perfect marriage. There we go. Let's move on to some news then. News time. This is the Cabin, the news section of the podcast. It was about just over a year ago that we went to the Coronation Street set last for our first time, and we had that nice whole episode dedicated to it, and we were almost tempted to go back again this week because of our first news item today. Gemma, do you want to say a little bit about this?
Why, because it's about dogs?
Yes, you are a dog person.
I like dogs. Yeah, they're brilliant. Anyway, the dogs who play Eccles, Ozzy and Schmeichel were at the Corrie tour yesterday, the set, yesterday afternoon, to celebrate National Pet Month, which, oh, what a great month.
I didn't know it was National Pet Month.
It's almost over.
I know.
The Coronation Street, the tour, general manager Andy Begg said, "Personal appearances at the tour have always proved popular, and I'm sure that a visit from some of Coronation Street's most loved pets will prove no exception. It is great that we can show our support and help raise awareness of National Pet Month while also enhancing our visitors' experience."
It's a really good idea to do that. There hasn't been anything kind of big or different on the Coronation Street tour apart from the quiz, which is like behind closed doors, I suppose, for quite a while. And they did a number of appearances by actors towards the end of last year, didn't they? But it's a good idea to have the pets there.
It reminds me of what they did on the Harry Potter experience in London, where they had the owls and things. And
yeah, that wasn't when we went, was it?
No,
I think they had it on Easter holidays last year. Yeah. But I would have loved to have gone and seen that, especially. Or who would you have missed the most? Whose autograph would you have wanted to get? Whose paw print out of those three the most?
Schmeichel, probably.
I think Schmeichel's probably the most iconic one, isn't he? Although Eccles has probably been on
Eccles
more episodes, I know.
Well, we were talking that we thought Eccles had a new actor.
Yeah, I don't think they have, because of some of the articles that have come
maybe
out.
Maybe he just had a haircut.
Maybe. Some of the articles that have come out about this have commented on the fact that Schmeichel was played by four different dogs over his time on it, and it was the most recent Schmeichel that made the appearance yesterday, but they didn't say anything about Eccles, so I don't know. Obviously, just been the same one all the time through. But that's an interesting fact I found out about Eccles on the Manchester Evening News website, is that actually she is played by a boy.
What? I'm going to say funny about that dog.
I know, make a fuss about like Bethany being played by a 26-year-old.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Whatever, but at least she's played by an actual girl. That maybe there are no behind shots of Eccles.
It's going to mess with my head now. For that.
I know.
It's really going to mess with my head, because I always, that kind of, I don't know what type of terrier it is. I think it's terrier. They always
Eccles
look
terrier,
quite,
Eccles terrier. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Yeah,
anyway,
look like girls too,
Eccles,
do they?
Eccles, no, they look like boys. Eccles, but then I convinced myself that it was a girl, and now I don't know what to think.
Yeah.
Anyway, the owners of Eccles also own Daryl the Rat and the Zier Chickens, which makes me wonder which came first. The idea of having...
Oh, I know, I thought that as well.
Yeah, the idea of having these things, or did they go, right, we need a rat, get a rat, and they went, okay,
I want to know whether they're just like, oh, we just got these chickens. Can you write them into the show?
Yeah, that's. Or do you think that, yeah, they're going to get a horse? That'd be good.
Yeah, just get whatever, and then Coronation Street has to put it in. But I haven't heard from any visitors or anything, but I'm sure they had a great time there. They were there for like 3 or 4 hours yesterday afternoon to pose for photographs and things. They should have. I wish they'd promoted it earlier, because I think the first time I heard about it was Monday or Tuesday this week, and by then people have already booked to go and see, so it's a bit of a lottery, isn't it, when you go there?
Yes, well, I guess, yeah. Maybe they just kind of gauging the popularity, and they can do it in the summer or something.
I'm sure it was overwhelmingly popular.
Yeah.
People.
Oh, I love
it. I wonder how many people went and they didn't even know it was happening. That must have been a lovely surprise.
There aren't any cats on the street, are there?
No, there haven't been any cats since, I think it's been like since Maxine died, because she had a cat. No, cats are brilliant, they're the best.
No.
Why? What were you going to say?
Because they are rubbish.
No, they're not. We've got a cat, how dare you?
I'd rather she was a dog.
I was so upset when Maxine died, not just because it was tragic or anything, but then the cat...
Threw the cat in the coffin.
Well, no, the cat ran off for a bit, I think, and then it came back, and then Ashley was so upset about Maxine dying that he like chased the cat away, and that was the last we saw of her.
Heartless when people do that.
I know.
People who are cruel to animals should be shot.
Yeah, there were more cats in Coronation Street in the past. Like Betty had a cat, and who else was there? Crazy Minnie Caldwell, the crazy cat lady of Coronation Street. Bring back more cats, I say.
More crazy cat ladies.
I suppose they are more difficult to train to do things than dogs.
Didn't they say that they, Crookshanks or something in Harry Potter had about five or a ridiculous number of actors, because one of them was trained to like walk and turn left, and the other one could only turn right or something.
Something like that.
Preposterous. Anyway.
Yeah, I think they should definitely get a cat.
This is an annoying piece of news.
Yeah, there's not much to say about it particularly, but the Labour Party, it's election coming up, and the Labour Party were in Weatherfield lands last week, launching their manifesto. I don't think they were on the old Corrie set, but they were nearby it, and I don't know whether it was like part of the tour or what, but all the articles that I read about it were saying, oh, Labour manifesto launched on Coronation Street set.
That's probably because they're worried they don't... I don't know.
They want to appeal to the...
Appeal to the working man.
The working man, don't they? Yeah,
I'm surprised the Conservatives, they're probably like, we need to get onto Emmerdale.
Yeah, so it's not at all Coronation Street related.
Well, no, it's not annoying. That isn't annoying. They can do what they like.
What's annoying?
Because Ed Miliband gave a speech outside the Rovers, didn't he? That's what you've written here.
He did not give a speech outside the Rovers. That was my old notes, and I didn't delete them.
Aren't you stupid?
He didn't go there at all.
Well, anyway, but, the thing that's annoying to me is Kim Marsh's ridiculous comment.
Yeah, this is a segue into the next news article.
Who do you think you are?
Doesn't
she said,
vote.
I don't vote. Shock horror. Why am I going to vote if I don't believe either of them or any of them?
Yeah,
makes me think you don't know what you're talking about, Kim Marsh.
She was on Loose Women this week, and all the other hosts there were outraged to the fact that she doesn't vote.
Women died for you to be able to vote.
That's what they said. That's what they said. I suppose some people just don't.
It's nonsense to say, oh, I don't believe. First of all, I don't believe either of them. It's the first thing she said, which makes me think she'd forgotten the fact that there were other candidates than just the two that she obviously knows of. And then she says any of them because she remembered that there were different ones. Different colours, Kim. That's a good way to remember in the future. Why don't you just pick your favourite colour?
Well... Whether or not you think it's going to make any difference or not, it's quite a nice trip out, isn't it, going to vote? It's quite exciting. You feel like you're doing something important.
You should vote every time. You should vote. It's so ridiculous to be... The thing that annoys me about people that don't vote is how proud they are of it. It's like people go, oh, I don't read books. Oh, no, I haven't read a book for the years. I'm so intelligent. Oh, I can't be bothered with all that. Or, oh, I was rubbish at school. Yeah, all the teachers used to hate me. I was so naughty. Get over yourself and stop trying to be anti-intellectual as some kind of, like, demonstration of how awesome and countercultural you are.
Well, I'll tell you what you can do if you want to make a proper protest about Kim Marsh not voting.
Send her some poo.
No, don't vote for her at the British Soap Awards.
Yeah, I won't
You're
vote for you.
You were just about to vote for her as the best actress, weren't you?
But I'll say,
no.
Oh, sorry, I didn't
Hold
believe
your click
in you.
For Carla.
It's not about whether you believe in everything they say. You've got to just pick the best one. No one's going to be like, oh, I've got, my party's called the Kim Marsh to get us extra pay party, and also isn't she beautiful party. Oh, I'll vote for you then. Brilliant. That's going to be Kim Marsh's voice on this podcast forevermore.
From now on, because she doesn't vote. There you go. I don't know. Anyone else?
If you
not
don't vote?
Vote,
you should be ashamed of yourself and keep it secret. You shouldn't go around telling people like it's like it's clever.
You sound like you should be a politician or something. You're quite forthright with your opinions, aren't you?
I would be a brilliant politician.
Mandatory Coronation Street and ban EastEnders. That would be my first and only.
Do you think that she would vote for you?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, what colour are you?
She'd be like the Fold the Arms party, wouldn't she?
Don't talk to me about it anymore, because okay. I could rant all day about this.
Okay, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Colson Smith, our favourite at the moment. He's doing something charitable. He's going to do a vote. Not a vote.
He's going to do a run, isn't he?
He is going to do a run. He's doing the Great Manchester one, which is great.
And how long is that? You didn't look it up, did you? But I just did it. 10K.
10K, that's good.
What a measly small amount.
No, it's not. You're good. You run 10K, don't you? Oh. You go 10K runs on Saturday mornings. Do you think that Colson and Corey Carter are up to the challenge?
Yeah, it's easy 10K. It's not that hard. Once you can run for about 40 minutes, I think you can run as far as you like. It's just a question of like whether you hurt your leg or something.
Ah. Well, I wish him the best of luck. He's doing it for charity, the Calm Zone charity, which is in memory of Mike Curtis, who was a Corrie props man who died in January. So that's happening on the 10th of May, Sunday the 10th of May, so that's coming up soon. And if you want to go and sponsor Colson, you can go to www.justgiving.com/Colson-Smith.
Good.
When's your run? Gemma's doing a run as well.
Next Sunday.
Can people sponsor you for that?
Yeah. They can, but they probably won't. So we'll not talk about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
Let's
sad.
Move on to the feedback section.
Okay. Okay, so let's finish off the podcast today with a bit of feedback. First off, thank you very much to all the Game of Thrones love, all the people that like my little pictures that I put up. They got retweeted and favourited and liked and commented on and stuff. So thank you. I hope people enjoyed those. Maybe I'll make some other ones in the future. I've got a couple of other family mottos kind of in my head that I haven't made yet. But yeah, thank you for all of the support of that. And also thank you for the two people independently who've been on a Nando's quest because of our rants about how awesome Nando's is recently. So Jane sent us a picture of her and her daughter eating some Nando's recently, and Kate is on a quest to find one in Ontario. How do you pronounce this place, Gemma? There's a Canadian
what?
Place name here. Guelph.
I don't know.
There is no Nando's in Guelph, apparently. But yeah, we're not sponsored by Nando's or anything.
We should be though. I'm going to look up who their PR agency is.
Don't give up the hunt for Nando's.
And also, we bought some Nando's the other day for your dad for Easter because he is diabetic and he cannot eat chocolate.
And we're going to have KFC for dinner tonight.
That's the rivals.
They'll never sponsor us anymore. Right, let's get on to some emails and messages and things. So we'll start off with Rebecca, who, that's her Conversation Street anniversary.
Aww.
She said, I just realised on the 10th of April was my 1 year anniversary of listening to Conversation Street, as the tour diary was my first podcast I listened to. I loved that episode.
That's
my favourite episode of Conversation Street, episode 90.
My favourite part of that was eating bagel tarts.
That wasn't even on the show.
I know, but it was my highlight of the trip.
What?
They were amazing.
We saw Jenny McAlpine.
Excuse me. They were amazing. They were delicious.
They were very nice. Also, I add, I agree with Tim as character of the week, as I have loved him taking grandparent duties like a duck to water.
Aww.
Karen's also Facebook messaged us. She's our music listener-outer. She often sends us music.
We tried to be good
music.
And kind of think.
I do not notice it
I did
all.
Make a few notes before.
What's the one that she's told us about this week?
I don't know. You read it out.
Oh, okay. I was just inviting you to talk there.
No, you really.
On the nose music for Canada's Monday broadcast, Sade's Smooth Operator whilst Callum was chatting up Sarah Lou in the Rovers, and On the Beach by Red Hot Chili Peppers, a song about LA, while Carla was drinking alone in her flat.
Good spot,
I wonder whether there's like ever just random music that plays.
It's probably somebody's job and they probably take great personal pride in selecting the music.
Yeah.
I imagine sometimes they just put something on that they like. Mm. Or somebody says, look, you can't put something popular on.
Yeah.
That's in the charts.
I like the idea of Smooth Operator with Callum Chandler.
Yeah.
So
oh, he's scum though, isn't he?
That is funny. I've grown to like him so much now.
Oh.
I'm going to read T-Ball's email. She says, hiya. I love that Tim is so delighted with the baby and I love him recalling what it was like when Faye was born and how he felt. About her then.
Very sweet.
Yes, he's came in as a bit of a ne'er-do-well, didn't he? A bit of a rubbish useless dad.
Useless. But,
yeah, he's redeemed himself, certainly. I do hope that they establish that Jackson is the father, even if they have to do it by DNA. I'm sure his family would be obligated to pay some support, and Anna will need it, especially if she's going to have to give up work for a while. Most childminders won't take an infant so new. I wonder if the school has a creche or daycare. Some high schools here now do, because it helps encourage young mothers to continue their education. I think that encourages people to become young mothers. I suppose if they did pay maintenance, they'd want to have visitation access. I anticipate if that happened, they may even try to get custody, even if they're better off. That would be a different twist, having the Hodges bring up the baby with Faye seeing the child now and then. But I doubt that this will happen.
Wasn't there a storyline where that happened, where a posh family came? I've forgotten who it was. A posh family tried to take a kid. Was it Simon? Yeah.
Yeah, it was Simon's grandparents tried to take him away from Peter, didn't they?
Mm.
I hope if Faye keeps the baby, I'm interested to see it growing up.
I wonder whether there are any creches in schools here. It kind of seems to me like a very scandalous thing that people would complain about.
I know, but if they're going to start anywhere, then I think that your high school would be a good place to start.
I didn't go to high school.
What? Your secondary school?
Yeah, thank you.
So, why don't you call it a high school?
No.
Okay, yeah. Everyone got pregnant there pretty much, didn't
I? Didn't.
They? Apart from Gemma, you were odd one out.
I don't know the highest pregnancy rates in the whole of Europe.
So, nothing to boast
but
about.
But to be fair, it was an all girls school.
Yeah, mine, I didn't have a single pregnancy in my all boys school.
No.
She also says Sophie might be a better one to be Faye's confidant, because she's closest in age and there was a bonding over the labour scenes. Now that Katie's gone, Sophie is a good choice to be a big sister figure. I think that seems to be what they're tailoring her towards at the moment, isn't it? I think. And it is so nice to see a more caring side of Sophie. She's just not just nagging behind the counter.
To me, I think she's gone too far now.
She's got
no redeemable qualities anymore.
I had to give enough on her, but I'm liking this new side of her.
What's the actress's name again?
Brooke Vincent.
I think she is enjoying playing the character.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like she really likes being grumpy.
Do you think?
But I don't feel that it's good for the life of the character, because if somebody said to me, who would you like to get rid of, which young character, I would pick Sophie because I hate her so much.
No, I'd want to keep her just for the Webster name.
I would even pick her over Zidane, because I want to know what the hell Zidane's in it for. He's got to be in it for something. What's he there for?
Yeah. I just want to see anything between Sarah Louise and Bethany and Faye now she's given birth, because we seem to think that they were brought in around this time so that the storylines could
mingle
together, but there hasn't been anything so far to do with that. And I think, I don't know whether they just don't want Bethany to have scenes with Faye, because it would highlight how older Bethany looks with her as well. Because at the moment, she doesn't seem to be like a teenager, and she's like spending time at the gym with her mum and everything. She's not doing anything that makes her look like just being a 14-year-old and maybe hanging out with Faye.
It doesn't help that Sarah Louise is so immature either.
I know, they still do look like brother and sister. sister and sister, which one's the brother? Yeah, but I don't know. I suppose Bethany isn't the sort of person that would be friends with Faye. But I mean, I guess with school starting up next week, maybe she'll start going to Weatherfield High, and with her school uniform on and everything, she'll start to look a bit more like a teenager.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, there we go. Thank you for your email. And we've got one last one from Sienna, who after this message was written to us, she wrote back us again the next day telling us she was a bit drunk when she wrote it. It was quite a funny read. Gemma, do you want to read this one?
Sienna says, "Hi guys, I really love Craig and Faye's scene on Wednesday's Curry. Having had a close relationship with my best friend since primary school, the relationship between those two nearly brings me to tears every time they share the screen together. When Curry gets it right, they get it right. Anywho, a few things that did piss me off."
Oh, yeah, definitely drunk.
Yep. Gary and Jason carrying to Callum last week. Does that crappy Honda or whatever classify as a flash car in Manchester? WTF? The ladies love him. Gary nearly bludgeoned a man last year. I mean, for Pete's sake. And he's intimidated by Callum. Really? 2. Bride and Gloom. Ugh. Steve and Michelle are horrible because their drama is horrible. It's never real or about anything that is of any interest. The Curry writers had an opportunity last year and Michelle thought she was pregnant. That storyline could have gone anywhere. Alas, it shriveled up and died. Withholding sex for fear of having a baby. Babe, it's 2015, not 1915. Yeah, and women can vote. Number three. Why would Carla ask Nick to fix her laptop? A bit sexist there. She works with a 99% female staff. Alia is familiar with software, as is Sally. If this contract is detrimental to the factory, why wouldn't you call in on your very ego-capable backroom staff to help you with drafting that contract and or any IT issues? 4. Steve is depressed. Sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's a massive joke. I love Corey, and at the end of the day, I am positive, I am pleased with the direction in which the soap has been moving. However, most of all, I love Conversation Street. You make my commute, workout, and leisure time so wonderful. Thanks. Sienna, you are so drunk there, weren't you, to say that we are so wonderful?
Well, just read her and PS at the end.
She said,
I was happy with this until she realised that she was drunk when she wrote it.
PS, Michael, I think all of your jokes are hysterical. Yes. Not even oral.
That's a bit of a...
That's a throwback there.
Throwback to the past, isn't it?
No one will know what that means.
Thank you for your email, Sienna. So, we were saying that Gary and Jason carrying to Callum wasn't realistic. I think Jason was standing up to him a little bit more, actually. He still seems to me like, I don't know, I suppose if I knew him, I'd be a bit scared of him.
Think about
a bit of a...
Gary and Jason are just Gary and Jason, right? Callum, the insinuation is that he's got like a gang of thugs and idiots that would back him up. And he also
we haven't seen for a while.
Hasn't got a job, so he would spend most of his time thinking of horrible ways to really annoy you, such as sitting outside your car with his Honda playing crappy music, I would imagine.
Is that not a cool car to have?
I don't know. I didn't even look at it.
He's got 444 on his registration number. My grandma always used to say that was lucky. When we were driving around with grandma and she saw a car with a 444 on, she'd like say, oh, there's one.
Would she say, oh, Jane, look, Callum, so great. He's got a lovely car.
Yeah, probably. And yeah, Steve and Michelle, not that interesting.
No, I didn't say that.
You're right, although Michelle's still just about managing to keep my interest a bit now. She's not quite so naggy or anything.
I agree about the laptops thing. It just seems so clumsy and stupid.
I don't know. Would she have called if it was out of work hours? I don't think she should have called Sally or Alia to come and help fix it. She's more like, and Nick is only lives downstairs from or upstairs from Carla,
well,
doesn't he?
So. As Sally is fond of saying, she's executive staff, so I think she would be quite prepared to help. They shouldn't be on the clock, those two, should they? You wouldn't imagine they're on an hourly rate, those two.
24-hour call-out is what Sally thinks she should be on.
I agree with what you said about Steve, though. Is it a joke or is it true? I guess they're going for the whole life is very much a comedy and a tragedy, and you can see the bright side in these things, but it does get treated...
I think that they've got a good enough balance for it. I think if it had been completely serious, I'd have got a bit too bored of it now, especially with the fact that they've got Steve, who's always been more of a comedy character. I think they're playing it just about right at the moment. Although the stuff with him and Lloyd kind of falling out,
I really don't like that. They're
going to be friends. Yeah, just make up properly.
And all that stuff about not being the best man and stuff.
Yeah,
he wanted you to be the best man, and you acted like a dick about it. And then he'd ask someone else, and then you act like a dick about it. Well, I guess he picked the right guy then, didn't he?
Yeah, so I suppose, I mean, the storyline is going to culminate in the wedding, maybe, and then it's going to kind of slow down, and then he'll be magically cured again after that. I don't know.
Oh, with a loving embrace.
I don't know when the wedding's
woman.
Supposed to be happening, I'm not sure. Anyway, that is it for our feedback.
Nice lot of feedback we got.
Thank you, everybody.
Loads
for
of
that.
Stuff this week.
Letters and things. So if you would like to be among our favourite people.
Famous people. Famous. You are famous because your name gets said on a podcast.
Yeah, that makes
you
famous.
The radio.
well, Sienna's on the radio. She said that when she apologised for being a bit intoxicated, she said that she is a journalist, but luckily in the radio.
I knew you were
writing.
A journalist because you use a semicolon.
I feel a bit embarrassed about having a radio journalist listening to
I know, us. I do. I was just thinking that. I was thinking, oh, she's obviously not a talent scout, is she?
Anyway, if you would like to have your name and emails or whatever featured on the podcast, then you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com or leave a comment on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. You can Skype us, you can tweet us, you can Facebook us. Just search for Conversation Street or at Conversation Stu on Twitter. Oh, and thanks to everyone who helped us get over 600 followers this week on Twitter too.
Amazing.
And as always, a request for the iTunes review. Please take some time out of your busy schedules to do it.
It does make a difference because people find us better.
So we're told. It would make a difference if people reviewed us.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Have a good week, and we will see you back this time next week with more Conversation Street.
Ta-ra!
Bye-bye. The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.